Hi, I'm Rachel. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Rachel.
My sobriety date is June 21st of 2009. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I am a member of the Midtown Home Group that meets in Bethesda on Sundays at 7:30. It's a speaker celebration meeting if you're ever around. It's a large meeting. We're very active, but sure, we'll be all glad to have you if you're ever in town. So I'm very grateful to be here. My sponsor asked me last week if I could come down and speak, and public speaking is definitely one of my biggest fears. But in AA, I try to do what I'm asked to do, if I'm able to. So in a way, I'll tell you in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I grew up in Maryland. I was an Army brat. I grew up, my father was in the Army. He retired in D.C. And from when I was about 6 years old until through high school, I grew up in Columbia, Maryland. Neither one of my parents are alcoholics. My mom doesn't even like to drink. I might have seen her drink like maybe one glass a year around Christmas time or something like that. We had alcohol in the house, but my dad doesn't really drink that much either. I occasionally would see him if we had company over, but, I have a brother and sister as well, neither one of them are alcoholics. My great-grandfather was an alcoholic, and I don't know what, made me an alcoholic, but I know that when I started to drink it when I was 14, my mom pulled me aside, and mentioned to me that my great-grandfather was an alcoholic and I should be careful. And I kind of thought, oh, whatever, I didn't really think of anything. I wasn't thinking about alcoholism at that time. I was just having fun. And before I started drinking, I grew up in a happy home. I was, going to church on Sundays. I grew up in a good school system. And, I was involved. My parents always had me very involved in extracurricular activities. I was involved in, soccer, and my dad was my coach, and I did dance, and I did swimming, and I did softball and basketball and piano lessons and violin lessons. They had me involved always in everything. And, but I was always extremely shy. And to the point where I remember, and I don't know if that's the reason why they kind of shoved me and all that stuff. Maybe they felt it was going to break me out of my shell. And I always excelled at those things, but it was always like I always felt awkward, and I always had a hard time socializing. And I always thought that people that I went to school with always seemed to have an easier time making friends than I did. And I remember my mom telling me that when I was younger, in elementary school, that my teacher, one of my teachers actually called home and asked if there was something wrong at home, because I wouldn't speak. I was that shy, and they thought maybe there were problems at home as to why I just would not speak at all, And so I just remember just always being very shy. People scared me. I was that little girl, when my mom would bring me somewhere, I would run underneath her dress, and that was me. And so I was, I was like that for years. I just thought that's the way I was. I was a happy kid. I just was very shy. And so when I got to high school, when I was 14, that was when I first took my first drink. And I started hanging out with a group of girls that were kind of doing that sort of thing. And I definitely was, attracted to, kind of the bad things. I remember seeing, before I had ever gotten drunk, a girl that I knew getting drunk. And I thought, man, that looks so fun. And, she's getting attention from all these guys. And I thought, and I thought it was fun. And I kind of was attracted to, people. I remember, before I started drinking, I started to smoke cigarettes and sneak out of the house and start doing things. And I liked the excitement. And so, 14, I started, I had my first drink. And I can tell you that, I never knew how uncomfortable I was until I really took that first drink. And then it was it was like a light switch. I mean, it was like the most amazing feeling that I had ever felt from the moment, you know. And some people don't, you know, I've heard some people speak that they didn't get that their first drink, but I for sure did. And I don't remember, like, my first drunk, but I definitely remember knowing that as soon as I started drinking, I fell in love with it, and I fell in love with that feeling. And that, like, scared little girl was no longer. It was like I had this confidence that I had never had before. And I felt like I was funnier, I was prettier, I was smarter, and, you know, I was able to talk to people and talk to guys, and I just felt like, oh my God, this is like the best. And so I started chasing that feeling. You know, being 14, I couldn't get it all the time. I basically started off drinking on weekends. But very quickly, now looking back at my story, I can see how, like, everything changed, you know? And I wouldn't have told you that, like, you know, and I hear a lot of people speak and say that, and that was one of the things that I was just like, when I got sober, I saw that, like, how my whole life, and I can look back and see how it just changed, like, everything. Like, my circle of friends changed, my, you know, I quickly stopped doing all the activities that my parents had me involved in. You know, I danced for years, which was, like, my one passion that I loved, and I quit. I stopped, and I thought at the time it was just because I wanted to do something else. I was tired of it, you know, and I thought, I'll do it later, and I got kicked off the cheerleading squad, and my grades started to suffer, but I was still able to go to school. I don't know, like, I didn't have any major consequences. Like, I mean, there were definitely little consequences, like getting kicked off the cheerleading squad. I stopped doing all the activities that I used to do. My grades started to suffer, although I was never really a good student, like, ever. But I was always able to pass. And so I can look back and see that stuff now that, you know, I started hanging out with different people. I also, you know, I started hanging out with older people. I started hanging out with older guys, people that could get me alcohol. And I would party on the weekends. And pretty quickly, I kind of ruined my reputation. Girls my age weren't doing a lot of the stuff that I was doing, and I ended up having to transfer schools because I was getting pretty badly harassed. So, and that's something that I never thought was in correlation to my alcoholism until I got sober, and I really saw that, because I wouldn't have been making those decisions had I have been sober. You know, so I switched schools. Same thing happened there. I switched schools again. I ended up going to 3 high schools. You know, but for the most part in high school, I just drank on the weekends. And I was able to pass, you know, minimally, you know, C average, C, you know, whatever, but I passed. And I do remember when my mom had the conversation about my grandfather. It was right after I had gone over a friend's house, and, you know, we were getting ready to go over a guy's house, and she decided to sneak alcohol from her father, and she poured some cognac in a glass. And I remember we were doing our hair in her mirror, and I quickly guzzled mine, and she was, like, taking little sips of hers, and I ended up drinking hers, too, and then she was like, whoa, you know, and I remember being like, what, like, what's the problem? And she's like, oh, I think, like, we should probably stop. And I said, okay, I'm going to go take these glasses downstairs, and I'm going to put them away. I'll put them in the sink. And I remember going downstairs, and this is when I was 14. I didn't get sober for 19 years later. But I remember going downstairs, and you know, I don't know, something came over me. I ended up taking the bottle, and I just started chugging. And the next thing I remember is she coming downstairs and seeing me with the bottle, and she was like, what are you doing? And it was too late. I had already chugged half the bottle. And she's like, and by that point, I'm like, it was just like, I was done. And she ended up basically dragging me to the guy's house. My parents got called. His parents got called. I threw up all over the house. And that was that. And I remember that was right after that was when my mom sat me down and she told me about my great-grandfather. And I didn't think anything. I thought, okay, well, I just made a mistake. I won't drink cognac anymore. You know, that was just an honest mistake. And never in a million years would I thought then that I had a problem with alcohol. And so anyway, so I graduated from high school. And I had no ambition. I mean, I really, at that point, all I wanted to do was have fun. And my mom said, you know, you have to go to school, you have to do something. So I ended up going to community college. I was still living at home. But going to community college, you know, I realized quickly that nobody was really keeping tabs on me. I could go when I wanted to go. And I started my partying increased. It was like, okay, no longer the weekends. It was like crossing over to the weeks, too. And by the time I was 18, I got my first DWI. And, you know, I wish I could look back and I can see now, but then I really did not think there was any, I thought there were people that I was hanging around with that were drinking the same way I was, and there was people that I was hanging out with that had gotten DWIs before. So I thought, okay, this is just what happens when you're young. You're 18, I mean, I'm having fun, I'm in college, like, okay, like, you know, slap on my wrist and I'll go on, you know. And they didn't send me to AA. They sent me to, like, a drug and alcohol class. I remember doing that. But I just kept on doing what I was doing. It really didn't faze me. I didn't think at that point I was an alcoholic. I thought, I just, like, it's a party. That's what I always thought. I thought, okay, I'm just a party girl. And so I kept on doing what I was doing. But, you know, my partying was definitely increasing. And, I mean, for the most part, my drinking, it was like, I had consequences, but nothing, I mean, I would say for about 10 years of my drinking, you know, I could bounce back. I could show up for life. I mean, kind of. I was always able to hunker down and get what I had to get done. Like, you know, I definitely procrastinated. I didn't have much ambition, but when it came down to it, if I was forced to, I could do it. Towards the last end of my drinking, I would say the last 5 years, I was no longer able to do that. It definitely crossed over to a different type of drinking. So, you know, I was going to community college. I got my first DWI, and I was able to hunker down and kind of, like, not party as much. Because I got to a point where, I mean, it took me 8 years to graduate college, so that tells you something. But it did get to a point where I was like, okay, my friends are, you know, they were all starting to graduate. They were all kind of calming down. And so I kept seeking people that were doing the thing that I was doing, but I was still able to, like, keep up kind of like, okay, I was still able to kind of hunker down here and there and get things done. But so I eventually transferred to the university and got my 2-year degree transferred. And I just kept thinking, well, things on the outside are fine, you know. I have a job, I'm going to school, I'm doing what I have to do, and I like to party, you know. So I didn't really think anything then either. When I started going to the other college, I needed a job. I got a job at a restaurant waitressing. And, you know, if any of you, I'm sure, works in the restaurant industry, it's like perfect for an alcoholic. It was like, I loved it. And I was always very shy, so I didn't think I was going to do very good at it, but I loved it, because it was like my people, you know, the people that I worked with, we all liked to party, we could all sleep in, made lots of money, and I saw, like, I remember they would promote from within for you to bartend, and I just remember that, I was like, that's what I want to do, but I loved to bartend, and so eventually I got promoted to bartender, and at that point, my drinking definitely, like, really just changed even more. Because at that point I was making a lot of money. I was able to sleep in. I had alcohol. You know, I could drink anytime I wanted. It was almost encouraged, you know. And so that was my life for about 4 years. I don't know, it was good for a while. I was able to do it. You know, I was able to sleep it off, get into work. But when I was 25, you know, I was, you know, we used to get off the bar, and there was a bar next door. We were able to go next door, and they would hook us up after we got off work, and, you know, give us a few drinks for free, and you know, we'd go off our way, and with me, you know, it's like when they talk about, like, when I would drink, I couldn't tell you, like, most of the time, 99% of the time, I definitely drank to get drunk. But there were times where I was in my earlier drinking that I was able to control it. But a lot of times when I would drink, I mean, I could not tell you how many I was going to have. And a lot of times when I would say that I was going to have a few and I had all intentions to have a few, you know, that would never happen. And it was one of those nights where we got off the bar and I went next door and my intention was to have two. And I remember talking to my boyfriend saying, okay, I'm going to have two and then I'm gonna drive over to your house. He's about 40 minutes away. And the next thing you know, I'm behind the bar making drinks for everybody else and myself. And I'm upstairs as a manager doing other things. And then at that point, I blacked out, which I was not always a blackout drinker. For a lot of my drinking, I was able to remember stuff. I had a really high tolerance. But that night, I definitely blacked out. And the next thing I remember is the loud crash noise of me crashing into the back of a truck on the highway. And I spinned around and I woke up. I don't know whether I fell asleep or I blacked out. I can't remember. But at that point, I just remember waking up and my car was spinning. And I thought, I thought at that point I was going to die. I just thought, okay. And the car stopped and I got out of the car and I was freaking out and the guy in the truck and I ran out in the middle of the road. I just remember I was completely wasted. And he came and grabbed me, and I just remember him saying, like, what were you thinking? And I was crying, and I was like, oh, I don't know, what is going on, what happened? And then the EMT showed up, and I'm in the back of the ambulance, and I remember sitting there in the back of the ambulance, and I look up, and there was a guy that bartended at that bar that I was just at that worked part-time as an EMT, and he was there. And I just remember him looking at me, and it was like he knew, he knew where I came from. And he looked at me and we met eyes and I was crying and I was in the back of the ambulance and he just looked at me. And after that night, I found out that they no longer would keep the bar open for people. Because I guess of what happened. So I went to jail and at that point, that was the first time in my drinking that I scared me. It was the first time that I thought, okay, I have a problem. Because the fact that I couldn't remember, because I wasn't a blackout drinker, that was just one of the, I guess there was a few times that I did blackout, like the time that I drank the cognac, but it was very far in PB 10. Most of the time I could remember, and I always thought I was in control, always. And I just remember that was one of the first times that I knew it scared me so much, because it just showed me, I couldn't remember what happened, and I really thought that I knew that I could have died. And I was really scared of the consequences. And I remember the next day, my friend calling me, and he said, he started to tell me like how he saw me get in the car, and they were trying to get me not to drive, and which I don't remember. And I drove it, and I got in the car, and they were standing there, and they said when I sped off, I went over the curb, and then he called me like a couple minutes, maybe 10 minutes later or 15 minutes later. And he said that I answered, and he was asking me where I was, and I couldn't tell him. And that was like a few minutes before, I guess, I got in an accident. And I could not remember that conversation. That scared the life out of me. I thought, oh, my God. And so anyway, so I went to court. I got probation again. Still didn't go to AA meetings. I don't know how I got away with that one. I think I was supposed to, and I definitely avoided it. I was like, no, I'm not going to AA. And so I did community service and paid the fines and so after that, I told myself, I remember after that I was scared enough and I said, okay, I knew I had something. I was like, I have to stop drinking. And so I decided that I was going to stop drinking. I also decided I was going to quit the bar because I thought the bar was the problem. I thought, okay, well, it's because I'm working at the bar and I'm partying so much that that's the problem. But I wasn't going to go to AA. I wasn't going to seek help for it. I just thought I could do this on my own. And I remember telling my ex-boyfriend, I said, okay, I'm going to stop drinking. I think I should, and I'm going to quit the bar. And I did it for a month. And I never quit the bar. I said, okay, well, I'll just work this week, and then I'll let him know. And then I just kept working there. And a month later, my head recovers very quickly. All of a sudden, I started thinking, well, I could probably drink. I probably just shouldn't drive, And I was like, well, I'll just control it, I'll just drink less. Just don't get to that point. Like, I thought I really had control over it. And so, and I remember going to my ex-boyfriend saying, it's like around Halloween, and I said, I want to go out. I think, you know, I'm going to go out and drink. And do you want to come? And he looked at me like I was crazy. And he was just like, I thought you weren't going to drink anymore. And I was like, I changed my mind. You know, what's the problem? You know, and he's just, and I saw the look on his face. He was just like, I don't think that's a good idea. And I broke up with him, like, very shortly after that. Because it just wasn't going to work. I was like, well, I'm going to do this, so. And I left that night. I said, okay, bye. You know, and I think we stayed together for another week, and I broke up with him. And from that point on, I mean, it progressed. I mean, like I say, it just progressed. And for the next, like, 7 years, I mean, it just got, I did a geographic. I did quit the bar. I kept drinking. I quit the bar because I felt that was the problem. I got a real job, you know. I moved to California. I thought that, you know, would fix me, and got a real job, 9 to 5. And if anything, that was like when it got worse. It was like I thought the bar was the problem, and it really, like, looking back, I see how much it was just me, you know. Like, as soon as I moved and I started working, like, a real job, like, that was when it really, like, I look back and I can see how it really changed. But I definitely eventually crossed over this line where I no longer had a choice. So when I was out in California, you know, I started getting really anxious. I started getting really bad anxiety attacks, and I thought it was because I was homesick. Eventually, my hangover started to get worse, and I hung out with someone who told me that if I drank a beer the next day that it would, you know, ease off the hangover. And I did that once, and it worked wonders. And I was like, this is amazing. But, you know, like, that one beer that I drank that one time worked that one time. And then that became a habit. The next time I did it, I needed 2 beers, you know. Next time, 3, and then 4. And then the earlier it started getting. And then I became, you know, and the next thing you do, no, I'm pretty much drinking my hangovers off all the time, like in the morning, and it became earlier and earlier. So when I was in California, I started getting really bad anxiety attacks. I started going to the hospital. I remember them, like, mentioning to them kind of little things about my drinking, and I remember getting literature and just kind of brushing it off, and I kept thinking something else was wrong with me. I thought I was homesick, so I moved back here thinking, you know, I'll fix it again, get my life together, it didn't fix it. If anything, it just started getting worse. You know, my drinking progressed, and it basically got to the point where, like I said, I was drinking around the clock. You know, the periods of sobriety became more and more unbearable. My anxiety became worse. I started seeing therapists. I was in the hospital on a monthly basis. I was in psych wards. I was being prescribed different medications because when I was seeing the therapist, I would lie to them. You know, I would never tell them about my drinking. It was like ridiculous how much I told them that I was actually drinking. I was like, oh, I only drink like a few a week. So I started being prescribed all this medication. You know, they thought I was depressed. They thought I had social anxiety disorder. And I started drinking on top of that, which, you know, and that was just, like, very dangerous combination. And so at the end of my drinking, it basically got to the point where I started to isolate, and more people started to notice. And I couldn't hide it any longer. I started drinking on a regular basis when I would go to work. One day I went to work, and this was, like, right before I got sober. I remember I went to the printer. I printed something out, and I went to the printer, and I turned it over, and the only thing that it said on the paper was, you smell like alcohol. And I quickly looked around, and I was like, oh, my God. Ripped it up, you know. And I called my supervisor, and I said, did you just print something out on the printer? And he said, no. I have no idea who sent that out. I saw that job today, which is amazing. I don't know how that happened. But eventually someone came to me at that job, and a good friend of mine, who's not in the program, but came to me, and he confronted me, and he said, you know, you need help. But actually about 4 months before he came to me, I got to the point where I started to want help. I got to the point where I was miserable. I couldn't live. I mean, I knew I couldn't live like that, but I couldn't not stop. You know, it was like the withdrawal was too bad for me. I basically would drink to go to the grocery store, to the bank. I couldn't do anything without drinking. My family knew at that point. I was living with my brother, and he had gotten involved. You know, he saw that I had a problem, and I used to have to hide it. You know, I'd started to hide it in my bedroom because he didn't want me to have any alcohol in the house. And I would just hide it in my bedroom and drink. And then it got to the point where I would be in my bedroom for 2 days straight, you know. And I remember one night, you know, he came and I came out to the living room and because it got to the point where I was miserable and I was crying and I wanted help, but I didn't want to do anything about it. And, you know, I just didn't know what to do. And I was crying and I said, you know, I just need help. And he just looked at me and said, I have no sympathy for you. And he said, you know, you do this to yourself. And it was like my own family, you know, my family was sick of it. And at one point I remember my mom came over and I was calling out of work and I had the blinds closed and, you know, I was in my house and I couldn't leave. But I had run out of alcohol. And my mom came over and I begged her for alcohol. I didn't have any money and I begged her. To buy, you know, to buy me something. That's like I think about that now, like how it must have felt for her to sit there and like look at her daughter. And, you know, I was crying, and I said, you know, my anxiety was so bad, I said, I just need you to buy me a little bit just to, you know, get through the day. And she was crying, and she was like, you know, you need help, you know, and I'd always say, I'm going to get help, you know, and I never would. And she took me to the liquor store, and she bought me alcohol, and, you know, it's one of those few things that I put my family through. So eventually I made a phone call to my sister. I started calling my family in the middle of the night, you know, crying, and I was like, I wanted to help, and I made a phone call to my sister down in Florida because she was in another program, and so she was familiar with AA, and she knew friends up here, and I told her I wanted to go to a meeting, you know, and I said, and so she ended up getting one of her friends up here to get me to my first AA meeting. And it was the most terrifying thing. I just remember I did not want to walk through the doors. And like there was so much ego and like I just was like you know, it was like, how did I get here? You know, it's like I didn't know anyone that was my age. And I'm not like that young. Like, especially coming into AA, I had no idea. Like, my home group is a young people's group. And I was like, whoa. Like, I thought I was younger. And you know, and so, no, nobody I knew. I didn't surround myself. I mean, at the end, I didn't surround myself with anybody. But I knew nobody that was sober. And so, you know, the first meeting she took me to, I just remember going up there. And she wanted me to raise my hand, and I wouldn't. And I sat in the corner, and I immediately just looked around and tried to see people that looked like me. And I didn't, you know, and I just kept, I related out. You know, I thought, nope, not any people are like me. And you know, afterwards she tried to get me to get some numbers, and I think I got one. And I never called her. And I left, and I thought, okay, you know, I'll go to a few meetings now, here and there, you know, and it'll be okay. And I relapsed, you know. And then I went again, and I started going to a different meeting down by my, I moved to Silver Spring. I started going, you know, again to, like, a different meeting, trying it out a couple, you know, once a week. Didn't get a sponsor. Very small. I would show up a minute before it started, sit down, talk to nobody, and leave, you know, right after the prayer. And I drank again. And the last 4 months, of my drinking were just hell. I literally thought I was going to kill myself. And so I got to the point where it was I went to the hospital and they wouldn't give me what I wanted. I wanted, you know, because I used to go to the hospital. After a while, I just would go because I knew that they would detox me if I told them what I. They would give me Ativan, and then they would fill me up with fluids, and I would leave, and I'd be okay. So, but this one hospital I went to, they wouldn't. It was the first hospital that I had gone to that I told her I had been drinking, and I wanted Ativan. That was usually what they gave me, and she refused. And she said, "I'm not giving that to you." And I thought, the first time that any doctor has ever not given it to me. And now I look back, and I really think it was God, you know, because had they had given it to me, I probably would have, you know, gotten my fluids and gone on my merry way, and they didn't. So I went back home, and I had a book and one person's number from that meeting that I had been going to off and on, and it was at like 6 in the morning, and I thought, okay, the hospital can't help me. What do I do? So I called that number, and I was desperate. And the guy answered the phone, and I didn't think he was going to remember me because it had been a couple months since I'd been there. And he remembered me, and he said, "I know who you are." And I said, you know, it was the first, it was like, well, it wasn't the first time, but I told him I needed help. I said, I need help, and I don't know what to do. And he said, "Well, I just started a new job. I can't come, but if you call, do you have a when and where or where and when?" And I said, "Yes, I have one." And he said, "Well, call the front of the number of that, and someone will be able to help you." And I hung up the phone, and I called, and a girl answered the phone, and you know, she sounded young, and I was like, "Oh, that's weird." And immediately I just said, "I need help." And she said, "Okay." And she asked me questions. She said, "Okay, can you get to a meeting right now?" And I said, "No." She said, "Have you been drinking?" I said, "Yes." I said, "I'm getting ready to go to work." And she said, "Okay." And I thought, okay, she's going to, like, you know, yell at me. And she said, "Okay, I understand." She said, "Okay." She said, "Well, are you going to be able to get through the day at work?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "Okay, well, you know, we'll get you to a meeting later on afterwards." And I said, "Okay." And that girl is my sponsor today. And she sent girls to pick me up the next day. And they took me to my first meeting with the Midtown group. And I showed, and I pulled up, and I just remember there were so many young people outside, and I looked at her and I said, what is that? Is that like a church group or something? And she said, "No, that's AA." And I was like, oh my God, I had no idea. And like for the first time in like years, you know, I just felt hope. You know, and these girls, they just opened up to me. They started telling me things that they did that I had hidden from. And I never told anybody the stuff that I was doing, like, towards the end. I never told people that I was drinking in the morning, you know, before work. I mean, people started to find that out on their own. But I was drinking all the time, and I just tried to hide it from everybody. And these girls understand, and they related. And they looked happy. And I just remember going into that meeting, and I was still very out of it, but I just remember being swarmed by women. I don't know, something happened, you know, I was so desperate, I just wanted something, you know, because I knew I was going to die, I knew I was going to end up killing myself, just not by on purpose, because I was too much of a coward to ever do that, but just by drinking so much, and you know, so they came up to me, and in that meeting, you know, something happened where I left and I felt different, and I felt hope, and I was just looking around and I heard people speak, and I couldn't believe that these young people had, like, you know, even a year at that point was huge to me, you know, 2-3 years. I thought, oh my God, and I left there and I haven't had a drink since, you know, my compulsion was lifted that night. I never to go from someone who had to drink literally. I had to drink in the morning. I would basically just white knuckle it until about 12. You know, I'd start to shake, and I would go off to lunch and get more. And I would do that throughout the day. To go to a meeting and leave that meeting and have that compulsion lifted, it was like, this is a dream. Like, this is weird. And from that point on, I started working the steps, and I got involved in the program, and I started going to meetings every day, and I remember that first week, people just took me around. You know, people picked me up, and I didn't want them to because I drove. I said, I'll meet you there. But now I look back, I mean, thank God they did, because I could have easily not gone, changed my mind, you know. And but I let them pick me up, and I let them pick me out, and they started introducing me to people, and I started meeting with my sponsor. And at first I thought, oh, my God, how am I going to go to a meeting every day? Like, I work full time, like, that's like, you know, but people did it, you know, and they seemed happy, and I wanted what they had, and I was so full of fear that I just said, I'll do anything, I'll do whatever you want me to do, just tell me what I need to do, and like a lot of people, I mean, they started telling me to do the coffee, they started telling me to pick up chairs, they started telling me, you know, to get a service position, and, which I was like, okay. But I did it, and, you know, I said, okay, do that. And now I can look back and see how valuable that is. I mean, as shy of a person as I am, it puts me in, it gets me connected. It gets me inside, like, with the group. And so I started getting service positions. I started going every day. And, you know, and it was awkward. Very, you know... After you take away the alcohol, I'm like that 14-year-old girl again who can't talk. You know, just like you see things, like, you know, I always like just see it, like so much about yourself. That can be painful, but it's like stuff that I drank away for so many years that I never wanted to look at. You know, I did a fourth step with my sponsor, and that's where I saw a lot of my defects, which I, like a lot of people, thought I was a victim. I thought I wasn't a mean person. You know, I have these resentments, and they're justified, and these people did this to me. And I got to my part, and I struggled. I was like, I don't know. It didn't really did anything. But the more that when my sponsor went over it with me, the more that I started to see about myself and patterns in my life and my relationships and, you know, how I would make friends, and they would piss me off, and how I would just throw them away. And, you know, how I ended up right before sobriety having nobody, really. And because of the way that I treated people. And so I started to see more of myself and, you know, definitely seeing a lot of how I treated my family, you know. Like when I did the eighth step, that was very painful. Just to see how I treated, like, how much, how scared, like, my parents were for me and my brother and my sister. And, like, my brother told me the other day, I talked to him on the phone, and my brother wouldn't, you know, I lived with him for 2 years before I got sober, and he didn't speak to me for probably about 4 months in his sobriety. And, because I don't even think he thought, like, he just, I had said so many times I was going to get sober, I don't know if he even thought I was going to really stick to it, and I did, and, you know, he came to my 1 year celebration, and, I don't know, I talked to him the other week, and he said, you know, I can't put into words how happy I am for you, and, you know, I can't tell you how scared I was for you, when I saw you, you know, killing yourself. And he was like, that was what, he was like, that was my baby sister. And he was like, I just saw you killing yourself. And he's like, now you have a life, and people, like, these people in your life are good, and, you know, you're just different. And, you know, it's like, obviously, like, I can't see a lot of the changes that I've made, but other people seem to be able to. And for him to say that to me, I just, you know, I just, like, brought me in tears. I could barely speak after that. But, so, and so, you know, I chose, you know, I came in the program very willing. I wanted to do everything I that people told me. And, you know, early on, I, you know, went through the second and the third step. And, you know, I was never very, like, religious. I mean, I grew up going to church, but I was, like, not, like, after I got to the age where I could really choose if I was going to go, I didn't go. And I never felt connected, you know, and so, but you know, today it's different, you know, I want to do the right thing, you know, I want to live by the principles and, you know, and realize that it's, you know, it's like I don't have control over what happens and it's up to God and, you know, I just want to do the right thing and so I try to, I mean, there's a lot that I have to, that I'm learning and I see more and more about myself and I just, you know, I have my sponsor. I talk to my sponsor every day. I run everything by her because if it was up to me and my decisions, it never goes well. I mean, the smallest thing, like, you know, and she sees things differently than I do. She has a different perception, you know, and it's like, you know, maybe you shouldn't go out to lunch with your coworkers and gossip right before you have a big meeting. And then you let your manager know how you really feel. And you know, and so just little things, you know, I just run by her and she gives me ideas and I just, you know, and she's, and I constantly, you know, I have her in my head and, you know, it's like, it's, and I watch what she does and I watch what people in the group do. And I try to follow that, you know, and because I know if I don't, I will go out there and I know that I will die if I don't do this thing. And it's hard. I mean, I'm awkward. I don't like public speaking. But it's like when I'm asked to do these things, I do them because I don't want to go out there and kill myself. I don't want to die. I don't want to go. I don't ever want to go back to that life. And I never thought, like, you know, a year and a half ago that I would be in AA standing up here. I never would have thought that I would be able to be sober and be happy and have a full life and you know, and want to do the right thing and want to do service and want to go to meetings every day. It's funny how when I first came in, I thought, oh my God, how am I going to do that? And now it's like, if I don't go to a meeting, I feel disconnected. I feel weird. And I enjoy it now. Like, I go there and, you know, and it's, like, not always easy. Like I said, I'm very awkward, and there are times where I'll call my sponsor, and I'm like, I have no friends here, you know. And she's like, oh, my gosh. And then there are days, and then I'll say that one day, and the next day I'm like, everything's great, you know. I have friends. So my head flips back and forth, and so I just keep doing, you know, I just keep doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I just keep showing up to the meetings. I keep doing my service. I keep talking to my sponsor. I try to, you know, reach my hand out to the new person. Because I remember my sponsor telling me that very early on to make sure, you know, to help somebody else. When I would come to her with my problems and what I thought were big problems or my awkwardness and say, I don't feel comfortable, you know, it's like, well, talk to somebody. Look for the girl that's uncomfortable. Talk to her. And I thought, well, I'm new. Like, people should be talking to me. And she, you know, and she's like, well, you have more time than they do. And think about when you came in. And when I came in, I mean, it was like, just for someone to say hi to me was, like, huge. Like, for someone to, like, remember my name. Like, if someone, like, I saw them at a meeting and she introduced herself to me, and then the next week, you know, she's, hey, Rachel. I was like, oh my gosh, she knows who I am. Wow. You know, and just make me feel welcome. So I try to do that, you know. And I'm not always good at it, but I definitely try. Because, like I said, if I don't, I know that I will, I'll eventually, in my head, I can see it now that I'm sober, how quick it is to, I haven't, luckily, had the compulsion to drink. But there are thoughts that come in, you know. But I can see more about my defects and how quickly I can become uncomfortable as soon as I stop doing the things that I'm doing and how that would eventually lead me back. I don't want to take a drink. I'd never want to drink again. I have no desire. I don't think about it, really. But I can see that if I stop doing the things that I'm doing and if I stop helping people, if I stop doing the service, showing up to meetings, you know, I'll be like, oh. And then I'll feel more and more uncomfortable. And I'll get more and more resentful. And then I won't want to go. And once I do that, it's like, well, what, I might as well take a drink. I don't know. You know, I still have a lot of amends to do. I've only done one formal amends with a former roommate of mine, and I tried to do a couple, but they haven't. You know, we would make the plans, and then they would reschedule, and I'm like, but I'm ready. I'm ready to do the amends. And my sponsor's like, it's going to happen when it's time to happen. You don't have control over this. Like, you know. So, but I definitely try to do living amends every day. I definitely try to, you know, I try to call my sister. I try to, who I found out after I relapsed had, or after I had gotten sober, had relapsed. And so, you know, she's kind of in the same spot as I am. She has 9 months now. And so I call her on a regular basis and talk to her you know, going to my, you know, I go to my brother's, I show up, I show up when I'm asked to show up. I try to, you know, call my family on a regular basis and talk to them and let them know what's going on with me. And you know, show up to work and do the right thing and show up to AA and do what's asked of me and try to help other people. So, and I pray. I definitely pray. I feel like I'm just like, I have so much more to do, and I'm not the best at it, but I definitely try to practice, you know, 10, 11, 12 on a daily basis. I'm not sure, but I definitely try. And you know, but working the program is definitely what keeps me sober today. I know today that there's no way that I can do this alone, and so I'm very grateful to be here, and I was very grateful to be asked to speak. And I hope, you know, my sponsor says to speak, but I hope that I, you know, someone got something out of it. So I thank you very much for letting me speak.